Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Well, good Saturday afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Catch My Drift. Joining me in the studio as often as possible, Brandon Drake. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, thank you. It's always a pleasure to catch your drift.
And it's always a pleasure to have you on, my dear man. And, of course, producing for us, Derek Stone. Derek.
Hello.
Good to have you back, my man. Thank you for coming in every Saturday and babysitting me through this.
He's special forces. He takes care of all the people.
He does. It's going to be a lot to talk about today. We've got the Zimmerman verdict. It came in. We got the crazy protesters.
No peace, no justice.
Yeah.
No justice, no peace.
Isn't that aggravating to hear, listen to that kind of crap? And, of course, the big story for us anyways is Detroit going bankrupt. Yes?
Officially
going, yeah. Yeah, how many years have they been bankrupt?
Exactly.
I just didn't want to admit it. But let's take care of our sponsor this half hour is the Current newspaper. That's C-O-U-R-A-N-T. Now, you can go to currentonline.com and see the latest editions of the Current as well as any other editions from the past. We archive a lot of them way back to 2008, I think we've got so far. And you can advertise on the Current by calling me, 734-629-6010. That's 734-629-6010. So call me if you want to advertise on the Current. I think we might still be able to get you in the August edition if you call me within the next couple of days. It's a great way to spend your print media budget. It really is. We deliver to over 30,000 people every month. And we've grown the paper, I think, since 2007 from 5,000 circulation to this 30,000 plus, 30 to 35,000, whatever it is now. And just a great way to advertise. Gets your message out there, and we'll be happy to help you craft that message if you're a little lost on advertising. So
it's a lot of bang for the buck.
Yeah, go to currentonline.com. All the information is there. That's C-O-U-R-A-N-T-online.com. So let's start with what we do every week here on The Drift. Drake, you and I go over the stories that I put on The Daily Drift every day, www.thedailydrift.com, and give our opinions. And you, of course, as the listener, 734-822-1600, you are welcome to call in. We love to have your views and opinion, which are more important than mine, maybe not more important than Drake's, but certainly more important.
Way more important than mine.
Yes. So let's talk first, Detroit bankruptcy. The breaking news this morning was a judge out in Ingham County said, no, that's a no-go. You guys have got to withdraw that bankruptcy because it breaks federal law. That's an Ingham County judge by the name of Judge Rosemary Aquilina.
Breaks federal law or state constitution?
Well, I'm sorry, yes. Breaks the state constitution, but it's federal bankruptcy, so of course. So she's trying to put a
kibosh on it.
The kibosh on it. And of course, within an hour, Attorney General Bill Schuette went ahead and filed the appeal.
I love that guy.
I do too. You know, he's a good guy. Love to get him on the show one time. It would be really awesome. But, you know, here's this judge, and I'm assuming she must be a bit of a liberal, maybe. And she said, it's cheating, sir. It's cheating good, hardworking people who work. And it's also not honoring the United States president who took Detroit's auto companies out of bankruptcy. Does that sound like a fair and impartial judge to you?
No. No. Sounds like class warfare, partisan politics, and just totally disconnected from reality.
Yeah. I mean, here's a lady who has, she probably lives in some upper privileged neighborhood in Lansing or near Lansing, you know, and has her own good lifestyle. Meanwhile, the people of Detroit have been suffering for years from the policies of these Democratic spendaholics who, you know, I heard on Fox News this morning, one guy was talking about, they looked at the positions within, he was somehow related to Kevin Orr, and there was a middle management position in the city of Detroit that anywhere else in the country would have a salary of about $80,000. And this person was making a $425,000 salary in the city of Detroit. Are you kidding me? You can't put the streetlights on. You can't collect garbage. You've got empty city. You've got homes that need to be tore down. And you're paying some schmuck middle bureaucrat $425,000? And you wonder why the city went bankrupt?
Right. And not only that, that they're paying somebody that totally does not deserve that level of compensation, but there isn't the money to give, even if he was worth that much for some bizarre reason.
Well, exactly. And this judge, of course, is looking at pensions. Now, I got to think that many of the pensions for people in Detroit are pretty doggone cushy pensions, you know, full benefits, the whole nine yards.
Well, you know, what's interesting, too, is they say that, well, the workers gave up a lot of current compensation, salary, hourly pay, et cetera, so that they would have this pension. It's like, how much pay do they really give up?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? They're lucky to have a job.
Yeah, anyone since Coleman Young Ford was overpaid to begin with. They weren't losing anything to wait for their pensions.
Perfectly put. Exactly.
You know,
yes.
Coleman took that city right to the brink. You know what I mean? Kwame did the same thing.
A mafia fiefdom.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the culture of corruption, whatever you want to call it down there.
Mafia of corruption.
It's crazy. You know, and the fact that, you know, Detroit used to be a city of 1.8 million people, and now they're just over 700,000 people. So you've divided the population in half, and now you still have the same bureaucrats. They didn't reduce the bureaucrats, you know what I mean? So now you have half as many people paying for the same amount of overhead.
Right.
You can't do it.
And what do these people do? I mean, I've heard that over the years it's totally impossible to do an audit in Detroit. It's impossible.
Right.
Because there's no internal controls. There's no cooperation. There's just nothing. It's just a waste, a bastion of waste.
Right, right. We've got John calling in from Farmington Hills. John, how are you?
Hey, Gary, I'm great. It's good to hear you guys. I really like your show. And I've been listening to other shows on your station leading up to you. And I've got to say that when you look at the books that I've been reading and how the president's been trained and brought up, he absolutely hates the suburbs and he hates industry. And when Jimmy Hoffa's son got on recently and did a letter, he says, hey, we were there for you. We bussed people in, we voted, and we had your back. What are you doing telling us we're going down to 29 hours?
Yeah.
What are you doing telling us we got to go on to this health plan? Well, when you look at what segues in, and I'm hoping you'll play it, and I know it's been aired before, but it segues in and it's waking people up. I've been talking to them. I taped it. I've been running around 4 minutes on YouTube, and you play, If I Want America to Fail. And he spells it out, and he gives you in between the lines of how they pull the wool over everybody's eyes. And they do this with a mixture of media and a marriage of Hollywood. And what? Two jobs are you held to a higher standard than anybody and why? And I'll tell you what they are. That's to be an attorney or to be a doctor. And the reason why is the doctor is the next nearest person to God because he can control your life if he makes a mistake. And an attorney also, if they make a mistake, you can have your life behind bars.
Right.
So therefore, it's a lucrative industry and it has a lot of influence and weight over a person's life. Well, what else? What's the third one that has that? The media. The media is so powerful. People look to the media and they listen. It's almost like when you would look to your priest or pastor. But they killed that. That was the first rule. Take out the morals, take out God. The second rule was split up the family. If you look at how he was trained, all of these things are in there. People are starting to come out and not being afraid. They're trying to intimidate you and surface these things. When you hear the police are scanning plates now and checking everybody's information, how did that run in tandem with this, we're listening to everybody's phone call? All of this is too much, and everybody's curling up in a fetal position and capitulating.
People, hey, John, I agree with you about the media being a big influence, and the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people get their information and believe it wholeheartedly from late-night comedy shows, morning zoo radio shows where you have two morons making crude jokes and throwing in a little bit of current events, and they go with that. The average listener, it's very difficult to educate listeners because so many are geared toward the listener, toward entertainment. So they get a little bit of skewed news mixed in with entertainment, and they think they've got the whole story.
I agree. And this is how our president acts. Just review how he acts. The thing that really sticks in my craw that has been buried, I'll bet you until I say this, you'll only remember from the first time when he was on the late night show with Jay Leno. He says, oh, yeah, when I was bullying, went into the gutter like some retarded kid.
Well, you know what?
The gentleman said a retarded kid, and he withdrew on that because he thought that would be hip enough for everybody to flow with.
Well,
that
he
showed you his mindset.
He gets away with it because, obviously, we know, you know, the media isn't dead with him. But, you know, Obama, in my opinion, going on these late-night shows as often as he has and the things that he said, he has done more to destroy the prestige, the dignity of the office of being president than any other, including Clinton, than any other president we've ever had. He is an embarrassment. He tries to be part of pop culture instead of being president.
So you're not voting. You wouldn't vote for him.
Well, I'm going to vote for his wife.
In the office. And what he did is that allowed the rest of the world to say, look, they're weak now. We're vulnerable. Let's do what we need to do. And they're working in tandem. You know, that's that whole plan. That's why I say it's so important. I'm praying you guys for one four-minute segment. We'll put out that. If I want America to fail one more time.
So all right, so, John, here's what I do. I've got Derek looking at it just to make sure that it's clean enough and that there's nothing
clean.
Bad in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Theron's played it.
Yeah, so, has he played it before?
Yeah.
Okay, so we will get that played for you in the next few minutes here. Let me get him, get it queued up, and we'll run it. John, thank you so much for your phone call.
You are so welcome. Have a blessed day.
You too. Take care.
Assuming we pull up the correct version, you know, who knows what's on YouTube these days.
Derek, you let me know when that's ready and we'll roll with it, okay? Oh, we're ready now? All right, so let's go with the video that John was talking about.
If I wanted America to fail, to follow, not lead, to suffer, not prosper, to despair, not dream, I'd start with energy. I'd cut off America's supply of cheap, abundant energy. I couldn't take it by force. So I'd make Americans feel guilty about using the energy that heats their homes, fuels their cars, runs their businesses, and powers their economy. I'd make cheap energy expensive, so that expensive energy would seem cheap. I would empower unelected bureaucrats to all but outlaw America's most abundant sources of energy. After banning its use in America, I'd make it illegal for American companies to ship it overseas. If I wanted America to fail, I'd use their schools to teach one generation of Americans that their factories and their cars will cause a new ice age. And I'd muster a straight face so I could teach the next generation that they're causing global warming. When it's cold out, I'd call it climate change instead. I'd imply that America's cities and factories could run on wind power and wishes. I'd teach children how to ignore the hypocrisy of condemning logging, mining, and farming while having roofs over their heads, heat in their homes, and food on their tables. I would never teach children that the free market is the only force in human history to uplift the poor, establish the middle class, and create lasting prosperity. Instead, I'd demonize prosperity itself so that they will not miss what they will never have. If I wanted America to fail, I would create countless new regulations and seldom cancel old ones. That would be so complicated that only bureaucrats, lawyers, and lobbyists could understand them. That way small businesses with big ideas wouldn't stand a chance. And I would never have to worry about another Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Steve Jobs. I would ridicule as flat earthers those who urge them to lower energy costs by increasing supply. And when the evangelists of common sense try to remind people about the laws of supply and demand, I'd enlist a sympathetic media to drown them out. If I wanted America to fail, I would empower unaccountable bureaucracy seated in a distant capital to bully Americans out of their dreams and their property rights. I'd send federal agents to raid guitar factories for using the wrong kind of wood. I'd force homeowners to tear down their own homes built on their own land. I'd make it almost impossible for farmers to farm, miners to mine, loggers to log, and builders to build. Because I don't believe in free markets, I'd invent false ones. I'd devise fictitious products like carbon credits and trade them in imaginary markets. I'd convince people that this would create jobs and be good for the economy. If I wanted America to fail, for every concern, I'd invent a crisis, and for every crisis, I'd invent the cause, like shutting down entire industries and killing tens of thousands of jobs. in the name of saving spotted owls. And when everyone learned the stunning irony that the owls were victims of their larger cousins and not people, it would already be decades too late. If I wanted America to fail, I'd make it easier to stop commerce than to start it, easier to kill jobs than create them, more fashionable to resent success than to seek it. When industries seek to create jobs, I'd file lawsuits to stop them, and then I'd make taxpayers pay for my lawyers. If I wanted America to fail, I would transform the environmental agenda from a document of conservation to an economic suicide pact. I would concede entire industries to our economic rivals by imposing regulations that cost trillions. I would celebrate those who preach environmental austerity in public while indulging a lavish lifestyle in private. I convince Americans that Europe has it right and that America has it wrong. If I wanted America to fail, I would prey on the goodness and the decency of ordinary Americans. I would only need to convince them that all of this is for the greater good. If I wanted America to fail, I suppose I wouldn't change a thing.
Ooh, did that leave you a little chilling? I had seen that before. Thank you, John, for bringing that to our... This is community radio. When you get a listener to who's paid enough attention,
right,
who's done his homework on the internet, who's going out and looking at videos like this, because you know what? Everything in there is true.
And John was very passionate about what he said.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I would encourage all listeners and readers of The Current as well to do that kind of stuff. You know, that this station... This show and most of the shows here are venues for that kind of information.
Right.
You know, so part of taking back media is you as a listener, you as a viewer, you as a reader, to get involved. You know, people complain. If you complain but don't do anything about it, whose fault is it?
Right.
It's yours. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I spend a lot of time doing radio, doing newspaper, doing whatever we do. That's our commitment. That's how passionate I feel about this. I'd rather be out on my boat right now and relaxing in the sun and listening to whatever top 40.
Tears for Fears?
Yeah, okay, Tears for Fears. All right, so you caught me. I'm an 80s guy.
Me
yes.
too.
But, you know, we come in here on a beautiful Saturday afternoon and put ourselves into the bunker here and hunker down and do radio instead. And it's not always, these are not great topics to be talking about. Sure, you and I have a little fun with it. But you know what? It's dark.
Right. It's very serious stuff. And we do throw a little humor in there because that's what we do.
We have to. But otherwise, we'd go insane.
Make it fun. Yeah. And you know what? At the end of that audio, among the many great points that were made, but at the very end of that audio, when you hear the words, "for the greater good," that's when you need to be really concerned, because greater good, more often than not, is for a collective society that's controlled by a dictatorship.
Or a few.
And exactly. And is not too far from eventual slavery to the state.
Yeah. Yeah. And the state always becomes the privileged few. All you're doing
is
taking the people who worked hard, got their money themselves, you take it away from them, and you're giving it to the bureaucrats at the top who live in Russia. They lived in Dachas.
Right.
They didn't live in the hotel, in the apartment buildings in Moscow. They had nice places outside them and nice apartments. They weren't sharing like the common Soviet people had to. So communism doesn't work, whatever you call it. You know, you can call it the greater good, liberal, progressive nonsense. It's still communism.
Right. And the justification always comes back to, it's for the greater good. And that's the big lie of communism. Like you said, it always fails because there's no incentive to do anything productive. And the hypocrisy is that the elite at the top don't live to the principles that they're preaching to the masses.
That's exactly right. And this is what has happened to Detroit for the last 50 years. You know, Kwame, Coleman, they all ran saying, "We're going to make it better for you, the citizens of Detroit." Did they? You had 50 years. Did any of you mayors, Democratic mayors, did even one of you make it better for the people, the common person living in the city of Detroit? Did you help them find, well, it's not your job to help them find a job. It's your job to make the environment suitable enough that people will come in, start a business, and hire those people. And they didn't do that. They drove them away.
To provide an environment that is pro-business and is conducive to creating jobs.
Yes.
And you know, like... Kwame, well, I don't know. A lot of the mayors and the city council people throughout the last 50 years, like you said, their big cover, a major reason they were able to get away with what they were doing is they would hide behind race. Because if anything was ever mentioned, you automatically became a racist.
Yes.
By questioning them.
Yes.
And the news, local news media, you know, totally in bed with them, afraid of them.
Yeah. And you know what? I hope this write-in campaign for Mike Duggan works. Because you know what? I have a feeling he's not your average Democrat, spend and tax liberal. I hope he's not. And it just seems like there is a bit of a grassroots campaign behind him. I'm sure he's got money. I'm sure he's got special interests. But I'm hoping, against all odds, that he can pull something out. And Mike Duggan, if you do get elected, you better make the change. You better not keep these bureaucrats. You better do something different for a change. Because you know what? As a voter in the city of Detroit, as a taxpayer in the city of Detroit, you have been screwed for 50 years by the Democrats in Detroit. And you got nothing for it. Your houses are falling down. They're burning down. Your buildings are falling down. You're losing services. And yet you continue to vote for the same idiots who have run that city for 50 years.
Yeah, well, that tells you something, too, though. Because a lot of the blame game is it's not the people that they elected. They didn't do anything wrong. It's, you know, the suburbs, and it's everybody else's fault that they're in the predicament they are.
Yeah. It's the culture of no responsibility. It's not me.
It's
not me. I didn't do it.
Right. No responsibility and blame everybody else.
Yeah. That's the blame game, mm-hmm. without a doubt. Well, hopefully things will change. This bankruptcy, you know, sometimes you have to hit rock bottom.
Right.
It happens with drug addicts. It happens mm-hmm. with alcoholics. It happens with spendaholics. No different.
It happened with the Soviet Union. It happened with the East Warsaw Bloc countries. They hit rock bottom.
They had to
change.
Yep. So they're making the comeback. Maybe Detroit can make that comeback too. I mean, at some point, just from a pure economic standpoint, people are going to say, I can go in and buy two blocks of houses for whatever tiny amount is owed on them tax-wise. You may have to fence it off and farm it or do whatever. Economics will eventually make people go back to the city of Detroit. But there's got to be a change in the culture, even among the citizens of Detroit. You know what? Mothers and fathers of children in Detroit, you need to get your children under control.
Well, Gary, that's where it all starts.
Yeah.
Whether it's in Detroit or anywhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely, in the home. And I think later on in the show, if we get to it, we're going to talk more about that.
Absolutely. We're going to get to the bash mobs and everything else on that, and we're going to talk about something you brought to my attention. I think I may have seen it way back,
mm-hmm.
David McCullough,
right.
In an interview with 60 Minutes. So we'll get to that, and we'll talk about that in the second half hour. But yeah, I mean, this Detroit bankruptcy, were the emergency manager powers sufficient? Well, according to James Homan from Michigan Capital Confidential, if you're not reading Michigan CapCon, you should be. I've got all the links at the Daily Drift. Great articles by very insightful people, very educated people. Michigan CapCon, I think, is for me, the biggest source of information from the state of Michigan. And he's talking about how there just wasn't enough. I mean, people, the creditors, including the pension funds and everyone else, should have been looking at Kevin Orr and taking it serious. Listen, work with us. Yes, your pensioners are not going to get everything they were promised, but at least they'll get something. Now going into federal bankruptcy, they won't.
Well, that's where it's going to be really interesting, because we were talking before the show, federal bankruptcy, the state constitution, how is that all going to fall out? My initial statement before the show was it looks like the Michigan taxpayer is going to have to pay for the retired city workers' pensions,
right.
But hopefully that won't be the case.
Well, answer me this. I mean, if that were to become the case, how long do you think it would take the people outside of Detroit, the rest of the state of Michigan, to say, we're not paying for that. Let's do an amendment to change that and change the Constitution.
I would hope that would be the case, but I've lost a lot of faith.
Yeah, well, I, for one, would sign a petition like that because,
oh,
you know what?
Me
the
too.
City of Detroit, the bureaucrats who worked there for the last 50 years, let's say 50 years, the good, hardworking folks that may have been there in the 50s and 60s are probably dead by now. God rest their souls. But the people in the last 30 years, the bureaucrats who have taken advantage of the system, I don't know that they deserve those giant pensions and health benefits.
I agree.
All right, we'll catch you guys on the other side. You're on The Drift. We'll be right back.
move, driving to work, getting the groceries, hauling the kids to soccer. How do they keep up to date? They listen to Wham Talk 1600, just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham for intelligent conversation with hosts like Bill Bennett, Glenn Beck, and Theron X. They stay tuned in for Fox updates, and they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 and advertise your business on Wham Talk 1600.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. 100 planned vigils and rallies across the country by people unhappy with the acquittal of George Zimmerman.
They want to put pressure on the Department of Justice to really look into possible civil rights violations that George Zimmerman might have had when he shot Trayvon Martin. The DOJ has said that they have an open investigation.
Fox's Brian Yenes at a rally in Manhattan. Journalist Helen Thomas, who broke barriers for generations of women and grilled presidents for generations, has died at 82.
She lived a life of firsts. First woman to be an officer in the National Press Club. First female member of the White House Correspondents Association. The first woman to be president of that group. And the first recipient of the group's Helen Thomas Lifetime Achievement Award.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson, the president, praising her fierce belief that democracy works best when we ask tough questions and hold our leaders to account. Fox News, we report, you decide.
I'm Gary Wellings, chief editor of The Current. To succeed in today's business environment, your business needs to be seen by as many customers as possible. The Current newspaper serves Washtenaw, Oakland, and Livingston counties. Advertising in The Current newspaper is the best way to get your money's worth out of your print media budget. The Current has grown to 6 times its size since 2007 because we have a unique venue for local content, common sense opinion, and your business message. Getting your business message into thousands of homes for mere pennies apiece is the best way to do that, and your ad is also seen online for free. Call Sam Iaquinto at 734-323-0777. That's 734-323-0777. Or go to currentonline.com. That's CourantOnline.com. Grow your business in print and online with The Current newspaper.
Hello, Wham! Listeners. I'm Edwin Hoffman, host of Speaking of Art. Join me Saturdays at 3 p.m. We'll circumnavigate the world of art with lively interviews with renowned artists, collectors, dealers, museum directors and curators, writers, actors, musicians, and philanthropists. Close to home or far afield, we'll visit museums, galleries, and historic sites. We'll explore the lives of famous artists and their times, discuss current trends in art, architecture, design, and antiques collecting, as well as ways to grow and protect a collection. But the main component is you and what you can take from the show to enhance the creativity of your life. Speaking of Art is one of the great conversations in your week, lively and full of relevance. So nestle into an overstuffed chair and join our room full of connoisseurs every Saturday at 3 on Wham! Talk 1600. Speaking of art, it's about civilization, yours.
Theron here reminding you to join me for the coolest music to be had in America today. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show. Hey, my neighbor's dog told me to do this show, and I'd advise you to dial in. We play a lot of cool music that you just can't get anyplace else. Check out the weak singing rock, the hip-shaking soul music, and the industrial strength rhythm and blues. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show.
Join Theron for the rockinest show on the radio. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show. Every Sunday night at 7 p.m. right here on Wham! Talk 1600.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back. Thank you for catching my drift. In the studio with me, Brandon Drake. Brandon, thank you for coming in and helping me out, especially when I was just rushed today putting the show together as I was.
So. It's always great to be here and a lot of fun.
Yeah, we seem to have our fair share of fun in this thing. So, there was a crazy theory put out by a lady, I think it's MSNBC. We're going to listen to this track from Melissa Harris Perry, who was a political pundit on the left. And oddly enough, instead of agreeing with the common sense that Detroit is bankrupt because of too much government, too excess salary, she's saying, not enough? Let's run that track, Derek.
But that point about having a government is, I think, part of, I mean, we can talk about the micro story of Detroit, but it seems to me that Detroit, as always, is standing in for all kinds of things about America.
Right.
And in the case of Detroit, the reason that the tax base becomes so small is because of a loss of population, right? So folks move out, they're not there to pay the taxes on the homes, and the kind of deterioration is what you see in the numbers you suggested. But this lack of tax base is also exactly the thing that many Republicans would impose on us, our cities have sufficient populations, even when our communities have sufficient populations. This is what it looks like when government is small enough to drown in your bathtub. And it is.
Okay, so first you could hear the other people in that round table. Yes, you're right. You're right. You know what? I'm politically incorrect or not, I'm going to use the word retarded. These people, like most liberal progressives, like most liberals, are economically retarded. Economically retarded. They have not a clue of what it takes to make a dollar, to earn a dollar, and to support minimalist government. You know, those people didn't just leave Detroit. Those people were driven out of Detroit because the businesses were driven out of Detroit.
And why were the businesses driven out of Detroit? Because of high union costs, because of city government, et cetera. Yeah.
Exactly. The progressive left pushed for higher wages to the point where businesses said, I can't pay it. I'm leaving. I'm going to another state.
Right.
The regulations, you know, drove businesses out. And then what happens when the businesses go away?
Instead of saying right, I'm going to start saying, you are correct, sir.
Right, sir. There you go. Yeah, it's insane. This lady is a complete moron.
They never have a grasp of the hard facts on the ground and human nature. They just have this pie-in-the-sky philosophy, and they stick with it.
Yeah, and the emotional ring to it. There's not enough government to save you from drowning in your own bathtub.
What does that mean?
Number one, it's not the government's job to keep me from drowning in my own bathtub. That's a level of personal responsibility that I should have. If you can't keep yourself from drowning in your own bathtub, I'm not sure your genes should be included in the gene pool. You know, if you can't keep yourself, if you're drowning in the bathtub, either you're physically enabled, in which case somebody else,
story.
A caretaker, should be
right.
taking care of you.
Yeah.
But if you're an average adult and you're drowning in the bathtub, you're probably on drugs. Or you drank yourself into oblivion. Either way, you probably shouldn't be adding to the gene pool. So, yes, it's not the government's responsibility to keep you from drowning in your own bathtub. It's not the government's responsibility to provide you a job. Again, as we said earlier, it's the government's job to make sure the environment is good enough for business to prosper and give you a job. Government never creates a job. Never.
Government is not to prevent the Amy Winehouses of the world.
Yes, well put. Amy Winehouse, you know, God rest her soul, she was doomed. She doomed herself. She never took that level of responsibility to say, I'm killing myself. I better stop drinking. I'm killing myself. I better stop doing drugs. You know, commit yourself. You know, I don't know how hard her family and friends or inner circle should have been a little. Same with Michael Jackson. Take a little responsibility. If he's that far along, his friends and family need to step up and say, we're committing you until you get clean. You know what I mean? That's where you're your brother's keeper. But for the rest of us, have some personal responsibility for crying out loud. I mean, that's what America is about.
Personal responsibility, that term is almost a foreign, unknown concept now.
It is. And you know what? This is what's killing me. Let's segue ourselves into this Zimmerman verdict. Now, last week on the show, we said, you know, it can happen at any time. They're going to come back with a verdict. And sure enough, like I'd thought all along from the beginning, he had been railroaded. It never should have gone to court to begin with. The original prosecutor said there's not enough. And despite all the money and media attention, Zimmerman was still found not guilty, as he should have been, based on the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can put all the emotions in the world. Yes, it's a tragedy. A 17-year-old Trayvon Martin died, okay? But the big thing for me is these people are all protesting, saying Zimmerman was a bad guy and killed. You know what? Of the two men, because he wasn't a boy. He was 17 years old. He was big. Of the two men, which one was scared enough to call the cops? Zimmerman. If Trayvon felt so intimidated, so threatened of his life, why didn't he call 911 and say, hey, there's some creepy cracker following me? Instead, he's talking to his girlfriend saying, hey, there's a creepy cracker following me. He could have called the cops, and the cops would have shown up, and one of the guys would have gone to jail, or they both would have gone their separate ways.
Let's be honest about the protesters. The protesters that think that Zimmerman should have been convicted and that Trayvon was murdered, the only reason they're out there ranting and carrying on is because Trayvon is black.
Yes.
And they're black. So who are the racists? They're screaming racism. I would argue that they're being racist because the only thing they care about is that Trayvon is black. Right?
Yeah.
And that a non-black person in self-defense, per the court, killed a black person. If it had been the other way around, these protesters wouldn't be out there.
Of course not.
If it had been a black person that killed
Well, they would, because if Zimmerman had been an African-American and Trayvon had been a Hispanic.
Well, then okay, he would be out there then, protesting to support
exactly,
Zimmerman if he was black.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It is nonsense. And you can go to the dailydrift.com, which is our sponsor this half hour. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm going to sponsor Aero, A-A-R-O. Facility Services has been doing facility services, cleaning buildings and commercial entities since 1945. And they are actually looking to hire some people. And you can get a job with them. You can call Vicki at 586-759-3700 or email Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, at aerocompanies.com. That's A-A-R-O-companies.com. That's a great company that I'm glad they advertised with us, and they're trying to get people to take jobs. So there you go. Aero Companies, 586-759-3700, looking to hire people to clean banks and stuff. So, but that's exactly right. You know,
If Zimmerman had been convicted, would we see Latin flash mobs and violence and protesters out there? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to the Daily Drift right now and catch video of flash mobs were social media-driven congregations where people would get together, do a dance, do whatever. Now they're doing bash mobs where a group of kids, teenagers, mostly inner-city youth, will show up at a location in a downtown district or a business district and run through the streets, beating people up, stealing their wallets, their money, their phones, breaking windows, stealing things out of stores, and then they disappear just as quick. So they call it a bash mob.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who would have thought, in this day and age, in a country like the United States, a mob would just come together at the last minute, vandalize things, beat people up, innocent people who had no idea. They were just there to buy something or going to the bank. They get beaten up and robbed for no reason. Is it fun? Is that what our culture, our youth violent culture does now for fun?
It appears to be.
Break windows, beat people up, vandalize things. What has happened to us as a society, where we allow our children to grow up feeling that that's okay?
Part of it's based on racial hatred. Part of it's based on our pop culture of violence, video games, that type of thing. Part of it is this I deserve this mentality. So if you have an excuse, you can go in and rob people or steal from a Walmart or whatever it might be in this flash/bash mob. There's all these justifications that really are a sad commentary on our current society.
Yeah, it's absolutely brutal. You can call in 734-822-1600 if you want to get in on this conversation. So,
and you know where it really gets me, too, in this whole Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman thing is, when are we just going to be Americans? When are we going to stop being African Americans and Latin Americans and blah, blah, blah? Why can't we just be Americans and look at the facts and support the facts in a case? That's why I love Reverend Ewell, Phil Lindell and the Abolitionist Roundtable, mm-hmm. You know, they don't fall for that racial crap, you know?
Right.
They consider themselves, rightly so, to be Americans.
Yes.
And I love those guys. They speak from a rational, logical, unified, we are Americans. Let's get to that point.
Right. I mean, there's no reason to, I mean, if anyone looks at the facts of the case in the Zimmerman-Martin escapade, Trayvon could have stopped it. He was the one in control. He didn't have to approach George Zimmerman and do anything other than say, bro, why are you following me?
Yeah.
Why did he have to throw a punch? Why did he have to get in a scuffle over it? You know, Zimmerman would have walked back to his car and waited for the police, and somebody would be not dead right now had he done that. But throwing a punch,
mm-hmm.
He could even have thrown one punch. Zimmerman probably would have just ran back to his car and waited for the cops, even after that with a bloody nose.
And again, we've talked about this. Well, Zimmerman shouldn't have been following him is the big mantra and cry in the media. Zimmerman had every right to follow him. It's not against the law to follow somebody, especially when you're the head of a neighborhood watch security patrol.
Yes.
That's your job.
Yes. They both had the ability and the right to be in that area, walking the streets, as Americans. That's their job. Whoever threw the first punch would be at fault. Whoever continued throwing punches and banging someone's head into the cement, that's the person at fault for what ultimately happened.
If I go to Briarwood after the show, and I'm walking around, and I'm a suspicious character because maybe I'm suspected of shoplifting or what have you, and a Briarwood security guard starts following me, I don't have a right to turn around and start smashing his head into the ground.
No.
And he has a right to follow me. That's his job.
That's common sense. That is his job. Mm-hmm. That is his duty to follow until the point, you know, and you ask.
And then if I jump on him and I'm beating the crap out of him and maybe going to the point where I'm going to kill him, at least he perceives it that way, and he's armed and he's legally able to carry an arm, I would say that's a reason to carry an arm is to defend yourself.
Right. If anything comes out of this, I would hope that youth, today's youth, especially those who are on the edge of being bad kids, whatever color, white, Hispanic, black, whatever, I hope they think twice before I assault that guy, before I smack that cracker, before I do whatever. I'm going to think twice and say, you know what, is it worth me going to jail or getting killed because that guy personally violated my dignity or something? You know what I mean?
And why it takes a Trayvon Martin case to make people consider that kind of blows me away.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems like if you're brought up properly in the home, you should already know this stuff.
Right. I mean, these bash mobs, I find just amazing that a kid would do that. I mean, they must have just played, what's that car game? The game where they go out and steal cars and blow things up.
Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto. Hello. Thank you very much. Are they so in tune with that that they think it's perfectly okay to walk outside of the house, start beating up innocent people, stealing the cars, and driving through the streets and doing crazy things?
Well, it certainly desensitizes them to violence and from carrying out actions like that. It has to.
It must. I mean, when you watch the video at thedailydrift.com, you think some of them are girls carrying a purse, and they're running past somebody, knocking them in the head, and stealing their purse. It's like, what? Really? It's okay to do? Where do you think that that's okay to do that?
Well, if you watch some of the documentaries on gangs, the women are often as bad or worse than the guys.
Right.
They're horrible.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to listen to David McCullough. I think we have enough time to get
right
in. And we're going to talk about what we've done to our kids or what we haven't done to our kids that's causing this. We'll see you on the other side.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Come to the St. Mary Manchester Annual Ice Cream Social, a tradition since 1892. On Thursday, July 25th from 5 to 8 p.m. on the front lawn of the church, the Village Green, 210 West Main Street in Manchester. Enjoy a great summer meal with all the traditional summer dishes, plus an ice cream and homemade dessert assortment not to be missed. In addition, there is a country store with home-baked and canned items, fresh produce, kids games, and live music. Special this year, there will be a basket raffle. Purchase tickets to win one or more of the many delightful themed baskets. Come enjoy good food, good friends, and good fun. All are welcome. For more information, call 734-428-8811. The Plymouth Elks Lodge number 1780 welcomes you back to another fine series of Jazz at the Elks in a beautiful club setting on the last Tuesday of every month from 7 to 10 p.m. On Tuesday, July 30th, it'll be the Cliff Monier Trio. There's a $10 donation at the door, which includes hors d'oeuvres. For more information, please call 734-453-1780 or email plymouthelks1780@yahoo.com. The lodge is located at 41700 Ann Arbor Road in Plymouth. The Advanced Freedom Awards will be presented at the first annual Michigan Freedom Celebration on August 13th at the Cromaine Lodge at Walden Woods in Heartland Township. The inaugural edition of this event will be hosted by Retake Our Gov Tea Party Group. For more information, call 810-207-1867.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community@whamradio.com.
or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108. Wham! Talk 1600.
I'm Gary Wellings, chief editor of The Current and The Daily Drift. With today's internet environment, it's easy to get information overload. The best way to process this information and cut through the internet chatter is to get your news delivered in a concise and effective manner. Get the news you need to know at thedailydrift.com. Check out The Daily Drift, one of the fastest growing websites around. At The Daily Drift, I find the local, state, national, and international stories you won't get from the mainstream media, and I make it easy for you to link to them. You'll also get original common sense opinions from local writers. You can even get a free subscription that will deliver a link to your email inbox every day for free. You'll also get instant access to all archived podcasts of The Drift Radio Show and links to the best articles, opinions, and websites. Go to www.thedailydrift.com. That's the news you'll need to know at thedailydrift.com.
I'd like to introduce you to the Westside Bookshop. Actually, most of you have probably heard of it. J. Platt opened it in 1975. Same great spot at 113 West Liberty Street in Ann Arbor, a couple doors down from the Starbucks on Main. Westside Bookshop is a place where your dreams come alive. Travel and exploration, literature and literary first editions, industrial history, U.S. railroads, autos, filmmaking, natural history, Michigania, Native American, photography, the rise and fall of empires. They're here. Classics spanning the 17th century to the modern greats. The Westside Bookshop was one of the first stores I visited when I moved to Ann Arbor. I've been a delighted customer ever since. Jay and associate Doug Price will make you feel at home and guide you through a truly superb inventory. So visit Westside Bookshop at 113 West Liberty Street in Ann Arbor. Looking for the perfect book, map, print, or photograph for a gift? They can help. Give Jay or Doug a call, 734-995-1891. That's 734-995-1891. The Westside Bookshop, treasures in print.
You're catching the drift. Gary Wellings and the Drift. Send the Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Call 734-822-1600 to join in the discussion.
And welcome back. Thank you for catching our drift this Saturday afternoon. Now, Drake, we were talking about why our kids are acting this way and this David McCullough video. And we're going to listen to a little tiny portion of it. Go ahead and give it a little how you picked it up last week.
Well, I was watching 60 Minutes a couple weeks or so ago, and I believe it was a repeat, but it was about David McCullough, America's historian, if you will. He wrote the Pulitzer Prize-winning books, Truman, John Adams. He's written a series of other books. He's a narrator. He's just a fantastic person, very interesting, and he makes history fun, not just, you know, dry facts. And he argues that history should be about people, and he's very successful in conveying that. He argues, though, that we are raising a nation of historical illiterates. Our kids don't know anything about our history, and that's part of the reason we are in decline. Yeah. He says that the parents, to partially correct this, it's not just the teacher's fault. There's a lot of blame there. But the parents need to sit down with their children, and he argues, at the dinner table, and let's talk about history. Let's talk about current events. That used to be done.
Right.
Now that's a non-existent concept. And our kids are suffering for it, and therefore our nation is suffering for it.
Okay. So, Derek, you've got that audio? All right, let's run with that track.
McCullough is the soul of courtliness, but also carries a warning to his audiences about his concern, his alarm, that history and its lessons are being lost to many younger Americans.
And those of us who have children and grandchildren, we are raising children in America today who are by and large historically illiterate.
The teaching in history has become your hobby horse, correct?
Yes.
You are calling us historically illiterate.
Yes, I feel that very much so. Ran into some students on university campuses who were bright and attractive and likable, and I was just stunned by how much they didn't know. One young woman at a university in the Midwest came up to me after one of my talks and said that until she heard me speak that morning, she'd never understood that the original 13 colonies were all on the East Coast. And I thought, what are we doing that's so wrong, so pathetic? I tried it again at several other places, colleges and universities, same thing. Now, it's not their faults, it's our fault. And when I say our fault, I don't mean just the teachers, I mean the parents and grandparents. We have to take part. The stories around the family dinner table, I say bring back dinner if you want to improve how children get to know history.
But are the teachers themselves illiterate in history?
Well, we need to revamp, seriously revamp, the teaching of the teachers. I don't feel that any professional teacher should major in education. They should major in a subject, know something. The best teachers are those who have the gift and the energy and the enthusiasm to convey their love for science or history or Shakespeare or whatever it is. Show them what you love is the old adage. And we've all had them, where they can change your life. They can electrify the morning when you come into the classroom.
McCullough will soon turn 80 and has begun work on his next book.
Okay, so there you go. I mean, he hits it right on the head.
Oh, he does. And we should listen to this man. He's a very intelligent man. He knows what he's talking about. And he touches on the fact that teachers should major in a subject that they're passionate about.
Yep.
Because when they teach in the classroom, that passion will come out of them and, like he said, will electrify the students and they'll learn.
And I remember teachers like that. We've got Tony calling in. Tony, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I just want to remind the audience, or perhaps some haven't heard, that Obama yesterday, perfect timing, fanned the flames of racial division by claiming not only could Trayvon Martin have been his son, but Trayvon Martin could have been him. And I think that's an ugly, divisive statement for him to make. And I also want to direct your audience to an article on WorldNet Daily of the recent death of a man named Larry Graswell. I had never heard of him. He's a man who went undercover for the FBI to expose what the Weatherman Underground was up to, which included Bill Ayers. And Bill Ayers, as you know, was a confidant of Obama in the start of his political career. And when you get into that article, it will remind you what the Weatherman Underground had in mind for our country. It's a shocking article. It definitely should be checked out.
And his wife, Bernadine Dorn. And that's another thing, is that Obama was never held accountable for having an association with these people. How can this be? The president of the United States, or he became president of the United States when it was known that he had an association with these people, terrorists, and he was still elected. What's happened to our country?
Yeah, because the media didn't vet him as they should have.
And they said, well, that happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
But if you get into that article, you'll see what the Weathermen's plans for this country. They would have killed 25 million people who would not have been, you know, changed through the mind, the mind-brain thing that they would have tried to pull on us. They would have actually eliminated 25 million people in that WorldNet Daily article about this man. Larry Graswell explains all this. It's really shocking. It just brings it back to mind what they had in mind for this country.
Right. Tony, do me a favor and go to the dailydrift.com website and send me a link to that, would you? And I'll put it up on the website for people to see so it's easy.
You know, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, they've never apologized for their actions and their beliefs. They're still gung-ho. And they spoke at University of Michigan like about 3 years ago or so.
Right. Okay, Tony, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. And we'll see you all next week. In the meantime, go to thedailydrift.com and
Take
stay
care.
Informed.